Okay, so we're starting a new cycle through the book tonight. We will have the pleasure of Ari's company for the next 12 weeks. Ari and I met for the first time, I want to say it was about 4 or 5 months ago. She threw a giant party at her house for me, but she claimed it was for somebody else, and I met her there. She's very humble. And then we got a chance to talk, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing Ari. And without further ado, Ari Z.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ari. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ari.
My sobriety date is April 9th of the year 2000, and my home group is the Florham Park Saturday 10:30 meeting. We're at the Presbyterian Church also on Ridgedale Avenue, and it's a really great meeting. So if you're ever looking for something to do on Saturday morning and feel like taking a ride, we have bagels, and we stay on our topic. And everybody's been sober longer than me there, practically, so it's actually a really cool place to hang out. So I haven't done this in many, many years, and I was thinking about how I best wanted to use my 12 weeks. And David said to me, you know, just take us through the book the way you would a sponsee, but we don't have that much time. Because I would start with, you know, the forewords and the introductions and all that kind of the prefaces. But, you know, the thing that I want to point out, just as we're getting to, we're going to start with the doctor's opinion tonight, and I'm going to spend 2 weeks on the first step, going through not word for word with the doctor's opinion, but quite a bit of it, and Bill's story, is that in the preface, it talks about, just in the second paragraph, and do you have the preface in the study edition? No, maybe, I don't know.
We have the forward.
So in the preface it says this book is the basic text, and I always like to highlight that with my sponsees to make them clear on the fact that this isn't a storybook and it's not a book of suggestions. This is a book that we study and a book that we learn from the same way that you do a book in school, because this is how, it says a basic text for society, and it's helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery. And then it goes on to talk about how there's been a strong sentiment against radical changes, and we talk very quickly about, well, I will say very quickly that the meat, the guts, the first 164, not been changed since publication. They've changed the stories, and, you know, they added the spiritual experience and the medical view and the religious view, but basically our program has been the same since it was first published, and that's because it works. Not my program, not your program. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it is written, has worked, continues to work, and it's only when I insert myself into the works that it doesn't work. I love in the foreword where it talks about precisely how we have recovered. That's in italics because it's important. You could always assume that if they put it in italics, it's important. I learned that in, like, fifth grade. In the foreword, they talk about, you know, the first 100 men and women who recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which is page IX in my book. I think I'm working with the guts of a fourth edition. I finally gave up my third edition last year and moved on. And that, again, talks to me about a recipe. It's if you do the things contained in these pages, you will get a very particular result. And if you don't do what's in these pages, you will not get the same result. I feel like it's, you know, if you weren't interested in getting a particular result, you wouldn't be at a big book study. There's a vast amount of non-Alcoholics Anonymous information being proliferated outside meetings like this about how to stay sober, and it does not involve doing these exact things. It involves doing other things, and I think it's incumbent upon people like us who are taking the time to study the big book to share this information. I used to do it like anti-tank artillery, like I would beat people over the head with it. I found that there's different ways to get through to different people. I don't have to do it, you know, like I'm the captain of the Big Book Army. It can be done in a more gentle way now, and I find that like myself, eventually when people are desperate enough, they're willing to do this work if they haven't died yet, which is what we're looking to not happen. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, just briefly to qualify a little bit, for the first time when I was 17 years old. And that was a while ago. And I did not get sober my first time, or my second time, or my third time, or my sixth time. I did go to a treatment facility when I was like, was I 19 or 20? Sometime in the late 80s. I can't really remember. And this was not the message that was shared with us. We were given, rehab talk and psychobabble, but we were brought a message from people from AA, so at least I knew to go to meetings when I got out. If someone was sharing the message of the steps through the big book when I got out of treatment in 1989, I was not hearing it. I didn't know that they were, or I wasn't open to it, or it wasn't my time. And eventually, on my own power, I could not stay sober. And I actually was way sicker not drinking and not working the steps than I ever had been drinking. And then my disease progressed. Eventually, I picked up a drink again. And when I crawled back in 5 years later, I was in a place that I can't even explain. And it took me a very short time, maybe 45 days, before I was like, oh, gosh, there has to be more than not drinking to come into meetings. And you know, that was the day that someone read the doctor's opinion with me. And I cried joy, happiness, relief, because somebody finally explained to me what was wrong with me. And I was super, super relieved. So that, it took me 13 years, 12 years of coming around AA on and off till I found the big book. And I'm sure the people were doing it. It wasn't my time. It, for whatever reason, that was not the path for me until it was the path for me. So just hopping over to the doctor's opinion, which is where I want to really kind of start the whole process. When I begin with a sponsee, reading the doctor's opinion, and when it was begun with me, I was not, I knew everything when I got here. I didn't understand I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't understand I was powerless over almost everything, and I certainly didn't understand the concept of a disease, never mind the idea that I had an allergy, and the first thing that I was going to be allergic to was taking direction. So, especially from someone who was just another alcoholic. So the idea that it begun with a doctor's opinion, with someone who was, you know, at least educated and had some sort of ground to stand on, appealed to me, and I think it appeals to a lot of people. So when it was read to me, a well-known doctor, chief physician at a nationally prominent hospital specializing in alcoholic and drug addiction, and I feel like those are, and I hope that I don't offend anyone with my trampling the traditions here, but in the current climate of Alcoholics Anonymous, there are just as many people addicted to drugs as are addicted to alcohol. And I once was told that saying you're an alcoholic and an addict is like saying you're a German Shepherd and a dog. You know, that being an alcoholic is being addicted to alcohol, and being a drug addict is being addicted to a drug other than alcohol. I was addicted to everything chemical that changed the way that I felt, that anyone put in front of me. And the only reason I was never addicted to crystal meth is because nobody ever gave me any. And if somebody had given me any, I would have done that too. Because I never asked, what does it do? I just took it and then saw what happened next. I feel like it's very important, because I do see the young women that I work with coming into the program feeling a little bit alienated. Like, in our area, you know, AA is definitely the way to go. They're attracted to big book recovery, but they don't know where they fit in, because they hear so much, you know, alcoholism, alcoholism, it's all about alcohol. But it's not. It's about the ism. You know, whatever your flavor was, it's about what the causes and conditions. And so I feel like it's a gift in this part of the book and in Bill's story that some of the things that are said that really help us to be able to say, nope, you're welcome here too. And that's my spin on it, and that's why this is my 12 weeks. So to whom it may concern, I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years, which is crazy because there really wasn't any treatment. In late 1934, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. And in our day and age, we don't really mark people as hopeless now. We keep trying. We send them to detoxes. We send them to rehabs. We give them one more chance and one more chance. Sometimes to their detriment, I think. We have to let people bottom out. But before Alcoholics Anonymous, people were really looked at as hopeless. There was no hope. I know that when I got here, I thought there was no hope for me. And I'm grateful that there was. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. In 1935 or 36, whenever this letter was written, that was somewhere between blasphemy and insanity. People recovered from alcoholism? Amazing. Impossible. I will hope that when I get to wherever I'm going next, I can rub elbows with Dr. Silkwood for a second and thank him, because this was the thing that gave me hope, that people recovered. Mm-hmm. I personally know scores of cases who were of the type with whom other methods had failed completely. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibilities of rapid growth inherent in this group. They may mark a new epoch in the annals of alcoholism. Now, thank God I was an English major, an English literature major in college, and I knew what these words meant. One of the things that I have found over the years is they make a big book dictionary. You can get them from different places, and sometimes it helps to have them on hand. Of course, we have cell phones. When I first started in AA, there was no Googling what a word meant. Even 16 years ago, you couldn't Google what a word meant and get an instant. I don't think there was Google 16 years ago. No. So, because some people don't know what an epic is, and some people don't know what annals are, because those words are fancy schmancy words that were used back then and aren't used now. So, in my experience, sometimes you need to have ask your sponsees, ask the people you're working with, do I know what that word really means? Do you know what that word really means? Because these words are chosen specifically because they're important. An epic is an age or a chapter, and the annals is the history. And, it's marking a new age in the history of alcoholism. That's a very powerful statement. It's like before there was chemotherapy. There was horrible treatments for cancer even chemo doesn't work that great, but there's more now than there was before. And that's what this doctor is saying. And he's saying that you may rely on the people, on these people, these recovered alcoholics, anything they say about themselves. Empathic ascites thing. Alcoholics were considered somewhere between criminals and mental patients, they were considered criminals and mental patients. For a licensed physician to say that you could rely on what we said is like crazy town. And that was, it went a long way for us. As the writer of the doctor's opinion goes on, he talks about something that was, amazing. Because how many times did I think, I love this part. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. Because how was it that sometimes I drank 10 drinks and I didn't get drunk, and sometimes I drank 2 drinks and I was in a blackout for 18 hours? I didn't understand that this body was this disease was physical, mental, and spiritual. And it's a terribly lonely place to not know what's wrong with you. and to be afraid to tell anybody what's wrong with you. And this opens, or to even ask somebody, what's wrong with me? To venture a guess. And, you know, this part of the doctor's opinion gave me an open door to start asking questions and sharing information with my sponsor. Well, the woman who would become my sponsor, because I wouldn't admit that I had a sponsor that first reading, because I didn't need a sponsor, because I was different than you. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life. Check. Full flight from reality. Okay. Outright mental defectives. That, for at some points in my life, was preferable to me than to being an alcoholic. Because there were cures for mental illnesses, or at least treatments. But to my knowledge, even 20 years ago, there was no cure for alcoholism because I had already tried AA and it didn't work. But I didn't really try this AA. I tried my AA, which is not AA. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that this explanation makes good sense. And I was like, well, I know what an allergy is, because I'm allergic to pineapple. If I eat pineapple, I get, like, a scratchy throat, and if I eat a lot of pineapple, I get hives in my throat, and then I can't breathe. So I don't eat pineapple. But if I have an allergy to alcohol, what are the symptoms, and why do I still drink it? And that is the strange mental blank spot we're going to talk about later. When it talks about working out a solution on the spiritual as well as an altruistic plane, my ears were like, what? I can't hear you. It also says that we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. So there's nothing wrong with detox. Some people need detox. A lot of people medically need detox. It says more often than not, it's imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he's approached, as he then has a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. So, yeah, trying to 12-step a wet drunk and start working the book with them, probably not a great idea. I know only because I was extremely overzealous, as I explained before, and I did try and do book work with wet drunks. It doesn't work. They need to be able to, you know, not pee themselves while they're talking to you and have some sort of, you know, recall of what's going on. And, you know, the only thing I need to do with a wet alcoholic when I'm on a 12-step call is assure them that this is as bad as it has to get and that there is a solution and that things can get better. And then let the professionals, the medical professionals, do their job. The second part where the doctor wrote is super important. The subject presented in this book seems to me to be of paramount importance to those afflicted with alcohol addiction. I say this after many years' experience as medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. There it is. There it is again. So it's we're open-minded enough to let Dr. Silkworth talk about drug addiction. But as a fellowship, because of some socioeconomic and demographic issues in the late 30s and early 40s, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've read some stuff about this that we can talk about later, the fellowship decided to strongly exclude drug addicts because they didn't want certain elements coming in their meetings. There was therefore a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on a subject which is covered in such masterly detail in these pages. There he is, complimenting us alcoholics again. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics. That means we had to tell the truth. But its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. So he's saying that doctors and God don't mix. They're bringing that back together now. But back then, it was science was science, religion was religion, spirituality was spirituality, and you couldn't cross that path. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care in this hospital, and while here, he acquired some ideas, which he put into practical application as once. He goes on to talk about the altruistic plane. He talks about how it's amazing that people that were incurable, they stopped drinking, they started helping other people, they were unselfish, they had no profit motive, they had community spirit, and that their belief in a higher power pulled them back from the gates of death and other people too. And that's amazing. So this is some important stuff coming up. Of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving from liquor, and this often requires a definite hospital procedure. And it's important for me to realize as a layperson that I have experience with the 12 steps of alcoholics. 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I am not a crisis counselor. I'm an alcoholic with experience at Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm not qualified to decide if somebody needs medical care. Somebody else has to do that has a medical license. And I'm not qualified. There's a lot of things I'm not qualified to do. This I'm qualified to do. And so if I have a question about what someone needs and it's outside my purview, I leave it to the people who are qualified to make that decision. There was a time when I didn't do that, and I hope that I haven't hurt anyone in the process, because we get, I call them the 5-year sobriety muscles, where you think you can do anything and help everyone. And it's out of a good place in my heart that I wanted to do those things, but I just, it's just not appropriate. And I'm grateful for the people who told me that my job as a sponsor or doing 12-step work is to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything else is someone else's job. So here's the really cool part. Craving for liquor, this often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit. And when he's talking about psychological measures, he's talking about even being able to talk to someone so that they can hear you. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So what he's suggesting is that we are bodily different, that we're made up differently, which, of course, has now been proven. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, like me and the pineapple. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly different, difficult to solve. So that line always confused me. Having lost their self-confidence, so they no longer were confident in their own abilities and their reliance upon things human. Well, because they weren't relying on themselves and they weren't relying on other people, they were relying on alcohol. But it took me a long time to admit to someone that I didn't understand what that meant, because I didn't want to say that I didn't understand what that meant. Their problems pile up on them. And what happens when I'm drinking and my problems pile up on me? The best illustration I have is I had 4 years of miserable dryness between the ages of 20 and 24. And when I started drinking, the bills would come and I would just put them in this one drawer, which pretty soon you couldn't open. And that's what I did with my problems. I put them in the drawer, and I put them in the drawer, and I just pretended they didn't exist, and I put them in the drawer. And I'll tell you what, by the time I finally opened that drawer, it was astonishingly difficult to solve. And that is an illustration of what my life was like by the time 5 years had gone by. That, you can imagine, I needed more than one drawer. And that was my life. It was astonishingly difficult to solve. And unfortunately, it takes longer than 5 years to fix the mess of 5 years, but I can say that with great confidence that I'm on the other side, for sure, of all those problems. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. And that explains why my mom, my dad, my sister, my friends, my boss, you know, we're going to let you go if you don't stop drinking. All right. Go to rehab or lose your job. Okay. I'll quit. Like, those things didn't matter. But finally, somebody sat down and read this doctor's opinion to me. And that was a message of depth and weight. That allergy idea was something I could really wrap my head around. I don't know why. It just is. And in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. I hear people come into AA and they say they want their lives back. Really? You want your life back? I want someone else's, please. Yeah. I didn't want my life back. My life sucked. I wanted someone else's life, and or a different life, or a better life, or a life. And I have a different... my life is unrecognizable to me. I do things, and I say things, and I go places, and I have experiences that I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is not real. And it's so... and some of them are very small and wouldn't mean anything to anybody else. And some of them are big and fancy and... are awesome, and they would mean something to somebody else. But my experiences now, I never even imagined them. I mean, part of it is I didn't have a plan for living this long, I'll be honest with you. I didn't think I would be alive at this age, so I didn't have a plan. Part of it is that the person that I was never thought I would have the life that I do. The important thing for me to get across is that alcoholics connect with other alcoholics. And it's already saying here that the ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves, which means no matter what another human being says to you, it's a higher power that's going to connect with you. And that's going to come through another person more than likely, but it's going to come from a higher power. If any feel this, psychiatrist directing a hospital for alcoholics, we appear somewhat sentimental. Let them stand with us a while on the firing line. See the tragedies, the despairing wives, the little children. Let the solving of these problems become a part of their daily work, even if they're sleeping moments. And the most cynical will not wonder that we've accepted and encouraged this movement. We feel after many years' experience that we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement now growing up among them. All right, this is the money shot. This is the thing that changed my life. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. Yeah, that's it. That's what I had to come to learn. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. There is very little hope of his recovery. And if this paragraph was all that was in the doctor's opinion, that would be plenty. They're pretty wordy, these guys. But so my experience was it was probably the second or third time I got drunk. I was like 13, 12 or 13. And it was the first time I blacked out or passed out or whatever, both. And I remembered just before, because I was one of those people that was like a reverse porcupine, all the pines, needles were on the inside, and I never for a second from the time that I have memory, which is about 4 or 5 years old, felt comfortable in my skin. And I literally, for the first time in my life, felt comfortable. And I didn't care what anybody thought, and I didn't care what I thought, and I didn't really care if I thought. And it was a summer night on the golf course by my house, of course, where else was I? And just as I was losing consciousness, I thought, I can't wait to do this again. And then apparently I threw up and passed out. And I did it every time I could, as much as I could, as often as I could, until I could do it regularly, in whatever way possible. On my car, when I was a teenager, I had a bumper sticker, In Search of the Eternal Buzz. Truer words were never said. Unfortunately, because I'm an alcoholic, I was always overshooting the mark. I could never... I'm doing hand motions through recording. I could never get it right. I would always go for that warm feeling and end up right in blacked out, crying drunk, angry drunk, promiscuous drunk, in trouble drunk, losing friends. It's, you know, the way that I drank was not, I never was buzzed. I buzzed was my starting point. That was pregame. And as soon as I got out into the world, it just got worse and worse. And as far as, you know, I didn't even notice other people's drinking. It wasn't, and I never thought about stopping. I never woke up and said, I'm never doing that again. I just said, I got to do that better. And even to the very end, even the last time I came into AA, which is this time, up until the time before this, up until my last relapse before this sobriety, my plan was to figure out how to do it better. I just have to get it right, and I won't have to stop. Because I couldn't imagine not drinking. I couldn't imagine a life where I had to feel all my feelings and live in the world with you people and not have some sort of numbing agent between me and you and me and everything out there. So if people are like, yeah, I really wanted to stop, I'm like, no. Never. Never even crossed my mind stopping. Once, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was interested in not drinking, and I didn't. Because I was pregnant. But the minute she was born, I started again because there was no reason to stop. A psychic change, you know, a rearrangement of thoughts and ideas, that's what a psychic change is. Looking at the world differently, I didn't, you know, to me that has everything to do with step two. I didn't have anything to do with my psychic change. I couldn't possibly change on my own. I didn't have it in me to do that. So on the other hand, strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who had seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. All right, that might be a little bit of a euphemism. Mm-hmm. It is strange that by the time I got to the third step, I was feeling that new sense of power and peace. And it is definitely a miracle, but it wasn't that simple, and it wasn't that easy. I'm going to jump down to the last paragraph on the page. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests. Hold on, page won't turn, there we go. Important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. My answer for the phenomenon of craving was don't drink in a place you can't get drunk. Like, I wouldn't drink at my parents' house. I would not even have a glass of wine at dinner with them. I'd wait till I got in the car and start drinking then on the way home. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense, right? I think it makes sense. And I couldn't afford my own drinking habit, so I would drink before I went out to bars. Because I couldn't afford, you know, to drink the way that I drank if I was going to pay for all my alcohol out in the world. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. You know, that means about 100,000 different things for women. you know, the sacrifices that women alcoholics make in order to continue to answer that phenomenon of craving has a very interesting meaning. The supreme sacrifice has a lot to do with what you do to get a drink or other substances for women and men in AA. And we give up our families and we give up our jobs and we give up our kids and we give up our morals and we give up our beliefs in order to answer the phenomenon of craving. I literally, the last time I answered it, it literally was like the inside of my head was a seashell and all I could hear was the roar of more. I need more. And it was like having a monster inside my head. And it literally, if I didn't know what the phenomenon of craving was, I wouldn't have been able to put a name to it. But because I had already had, at that point, about 10 months in the big book, which, by the way, I had memorized and was spouting off everywhere whilst I, you know, answered that phenomenon of craving with everything I had. That was my last relapse, thank God. The noise that phenomenon of craving makes, it's you know, I know that there's no disease outside this room doing push-ups. I know that it's in my head. I know that it's something that lives in me, and I've seen it, and it is terrifying. And so, the phenomenon of craving to me is that monster. It's the thing that it fate that I face if I don't take these actions every day to stay in a good spiritual place. I want to move on for the last like 15 minutes I have to Bill's story because I'm going to run out of weeks. The doctor's opinion is super, super important to me. I can't explain how much it changed my life, especially those two paragraphs. I'm happy to talk with anybody after about it, but let's hop over to Bill's story and see what I can do in 15 minutes, and maybe I'll finish it next week if I have to. Oh, actually, I said I was going to do the first step for 2 weeks. Now I'm confused. Yeah. Never mind. There are many situations... Oh, okay, I was there. The classification of alcoholics seems most difficult, and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths, who are emotionally unstable. We are all familiar with this type. They are always going on the wagon for keeps. Oh, I definitely wasn't that. They are over-remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. There is a type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. There is a type who always believes that being entirely free for alcohol, that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. There is the manic depressive type, who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and about whom a whole chapter could be written. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. I think we're all a little bit of all of them. I know I am. I know I qualify in a lot of different places. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And, you know, it's so funny. God is so good. I've had some sponsees over the years. I had one girl who, she tried that medication that I can't remember the name of that makes you get sick if you drink alcohol. That, yeah. Antabuse. And she took the medication and drank regardless of getting sick. I had the same one with an opiate inhibitor that took that and got sick. I knew a guy who had the implants of the opiate inhibitor and dug them out of his own stomach in order to use because of the phenomenon of craving, which, you know, because of the mental obsession, prior to the phenomenon of craving, because this disease is a monster. And it's a beast. My friend Beth calls it the beast. And the beast gets what the beast wants unless you're working on being connected to the God of your understanding, which is the only thing strong enough to tame the beast. And I get goosebumps when I think about that. I get goosebumps about the way that the beast would get me up out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning to crawl on my hands and knees to the cabinet underneath the bathroom sink because I had rules, you know, and one of them was after I got divorced, my daughter was like 2 or 3, and so I didn't drink when I had her. I only binged when I didn't have her, but drinking an entire bottle of NyQuil did not count because it was medicine, not alcohol. This all makes sense to me, and so I would crawl on my hands and knees to have the second bottle. I literally kept that company in business. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they survived after I stopped. And I was, it makes you really sick too. And I would shake and it was just God awful. And and it was the beast that woke me up at 2 or 3 in the morning to have that second almost full bottle after having almost a full bottle to go to sleep at night. And the sick, how sick I'd be when I woke up in the morning and my baby would look at me and say, "Mommy's sick." And I would be crying and drinking the stuff and she'd be wiping my snot with her little hand. Oh, it was horrible. I can't even think about it now. Yep, she is studying behavioral neuroscience and addiction at Temple University. So, you know, anyway. Don't know how that happened. So, this immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. What is the solution? Perhaps I can best answer this by relating one of my experiences. About 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration, which I imagine is something like wet brain. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was living, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed that for him there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I had known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time has passed with no return to alcohol. When I need a mental uplift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. The patient had made his own diagnosis and, deciding his situation hopeless, had hidden in a deserted barn determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and in desperate condition brought to me. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort unless I could assure him, which no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. His alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great that we felt his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology, and we doubted if even that would have any effect. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then, and he is as fine a specimen of manhood as one could wish to meet. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and though he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. William D. Silkworth, MD. I think that without a doubt, I get goosebumps every time I read the doctor's opinion because it changed my life so profoundly, and I've seen it change other people's lives. It's the aha moment that I had, and I don't know if it's everybody's aha moment, But it was my aha. And there's a lot more. I'm going to say that every chapter we read is my favorite chapter, so I'm just warning you now, because it all has been so important to me. And I think, except maybe Bill's story, but I probably there's things in there I love too. I think that the importance of sharing the doctor's opinion is, you know, it's the first place we go. And when I run into somebody new and they're not sure if they're an alcoholic, the first place I send them is the doctor's opinion to see if they can diagnose themselves. And if I have a sponsee who's struggling, I send them to the doctor's opinion. Well, first I send them to page 52, and then I send them to the doctor's opinion. Because I have to remember that I was the alcoholic who felt better just on my way to the liquor store. You know, if I ordered my drink at the bar, the spring started to uncoil. If I was, you know, in the car, I'd like to say I waited till I got home to open the booze and start drinking, but that's just a lie. I drank and drove like it was my job and I was getting paid for it. So, but literally, I didn't even have to have the drink in me. As long as I was holding it or I knew I was getting it shortly, you know, that phenomenon of craving ruled my life. And until I could put a name to the face, until I identified the beast, I had no idea why my life was so bad. And I had no idea why it was so out of control. And this, you know, this part of our book, The Doctor's Opinion, was what started me on the path to grace. And, you know, Dave and I talked about this, you know, quite a few months ago. We talked about, you know, what I wanted to, like, bill my 12 weeks as, and it was, you know, receiving grace through the 12 steps. And, you know, I couldn't receive any grace till I realized that I didn't have any power. And I couldn't get any power till I received grace. And for me, I had to know that, you know, I had a problem, and this is where it all began. So I didn't quite hit an hour. Next week, we're going to pick up with Bill's story. And so anyway, that will be exciting. And I hope I didn't butcher this too badly, because I was really nervous. I hope you couldn't tell. I know I could. And that's all I have to share. Thanks.